First of all, thank you for coming here to this session. I think it's fantastic to have an audience who is potentially interested with regulation and compliance. This is something that impacts us, all of us, as a community, as our users, consumers, and also from a work perspective. So I think it's really important to be able to understand what are the impacts of regulations, compliance, certifications, when we are developing software, when we are sharing our work from a, I would say, a community perspective, but also when that work goes into production on systems, critical systems. So thank you for being here for that. Today we have the unique opportunity to have some of the folks who wrote, or at least review, wrote some of the legislation directives, like the Cyber Resilience Act. And we will go through a couple of lightning talks, because I think it's really important to set the scene. So we could start discussing about having a panel, but if we don't understand the overall construct of those regulations, that's going to be hard. So I would like to have a warm welcome from Benjamin here. If you can give him a bit of love. Thank you. So we are really honored to have the European Commission here to help us with this. So thank you. Benjamin, up to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for having me and also for showing interest in our work. That will maybe affect some of you, but most of you probably won't be affected by it. as a commission, we're always trying very hard to reach out to all the people that could potentially be affected by our regulation, but it's sometimes a bit difficult. I mean, it's often mostly large companies that have the resources to actually engage with us. So I'm really happy to be here, and I'm so glad that so many of you decided also to stay for this panel. So the Cyber Resilience Act is a new proposal of the European Commission. It intends to improve the cybersecurity of hardware and software products. It's intended to complete a puzzle. So there's already other legislation at union level on cybersecurity. Most notably, there is the NIS directive, which has recently been reformed. The NIS directive focuses more on the users of hardware and software, so it ensures that large companies, critical infrastructure providers, and so forth take security seriously, do their patches regularly, and all that. But the Cyber Resilience Act now focuses on the other side, on the manufacturers of these products. And I know that many of you are probably not dealing with policy every day, and in particular not with European Union policy. So I've just like added one slide at the very beginning to quickly explain to you like what the Commission is and where we are in this process and who the other players are. So this is highly simplified. It's much more complicated than that, unfortunately. So I work for the European Commission for the Directorate General Connect. It's like the Directorate Generals. They are like departments within the Commission. So we mostly deal with telecommunications, internet, emerging technologies, and so forth. And it is the European Commission that makes legislative proposals in the European Union. So we write the draft, and then we propose this draft to the so-called co-legislators. That's the European Parliament, and where you have the members of the European Parliament, so parliamentarians, and the Council that represents the 27 member states. And these two institutions, they analyze the Commission's proposal, they come up with their own positions, and once they've done that, they negotiate with one another. And at the very end, once they agree on a common line, a common position, they adopt the text, and it enters into force. It becomes a law. So this is basically how it works. It's very simplified. So our proposal came out on 15 September 2022. so in autumn, and it's now with Parliament and Council. Parliament has not yet started discussing it. They're still sorting out which committees will be in charge of it, but Council is already at full speed. There are regular meetings every second Wednesday. The Council is meeting to discuss the text proposed by the Commission. So that's just for your background. And now I will talk about the substance of the proposal. So what are we trying to achieve? So we want to reduce the number of vulnerabilities in hardware and software products. Of course, we know that it's an unrealistic goal to aim for zero vulnerabilities in products, and this is what this slide represents. So the cheese represents a hardware or software product filled with holes. I mean, I know not all are filled with holes, but many are. And I mean, we attempt to reduce the number of such security holes in hardware and software products through legislation. And yeah, I will just get right into the main elements of the proposal to give you an overview, and then I will, you know, provide some more details. So it's all about providing cybersecurity rules for hardware and software products when they're placed on the market. So placing on the market entails that we're talking about commercial activities here. So companies that make money with hardware and software products, they will have to follow these rules. We're using a well-established framework. It's called the new legislative framework. It's been used in the past by the European Union to regulate other products, such as toys or machinery, or electrical equipment, and you may not know it, but you're all actually very familiar with it. So whenever you see a product that has the CE marking on it, CE, I will show it later, like you have it, for example, on laptops or iPhone chargers and such things. So this is all a new legislative framework regulation then. What we do in the proposal is we establish obligations for three types of economic operators. For the manufacturers, I mean, that's the core element, of course, of the proposal. But then there are also the distributors. These are brick-and-mortar stores, online shops, and also importers that place products on the European market that have been developed in third countries. And the importers and the distributors, they don't have to, I mean, they don't do secure coding, of course. They are just selling products. But they have to ensure that the products that they are selling are, like, in line, I mean, that they comply with the Cyber Resilience Act. One of the core novelties of our proposal is that it does not just cover rules for the placing on the market, so what the product should look like, but it also covers the period after that, the entire life cycle. So I mean, you all know that for cybersecurity, it's extremely important that you keep tracking your products, that you ensure that when you discover new vulnerabilities, that you fix them, you mitigate them, you provide patches and so forth. And this is part of our proposal, that for a period of 5 years after the placing on the market of a product, you do that, you provide security updates. One essential element of any new legislative framework regulation is harmonized standards. So the rules that we propose in the Cyber Resilience Act, they are very high level, technology neutral, objective oriented. I mean, if you go through the proposal, you will see they are really high level. It's more like on the level of provide a secure by default configuration, take care of access management, make sure data is handled confidentially and so forth. So really high level. But then we have the standards that will be developed by the European standardization organizations. You may have heard of them. They're called SENS, ENELEC, and ETSI. And they will, I mean, they are voluntary. You don't need to use these standards, but they will help you write secure products. And then there is also the conformity assessment. So manufacturers, they will have to demonstrate that their products are actually compliant, but I will explain that in more detail later. Yeah, and finally, there's the market surveillance. So in all the member states, you will have authorities that can check out the products and approach manufacturers, ask them to remediate vulnerabilities, eliminate risks, and if they don't comply, even hand out fines. So the scope of the proposal, it's hardware and software products. Products, not services. So when I say hardware products and software products, I mean final products such as laptops or operating systems, but also components such as CPUs, hard drives, software libraries, and so forth. We have we don't regulate services, so software as a service is outside the scope of this proposal. That's already regulated by the NIS directive, which I mentioned earlier. But we do regulate something that we call remote data processing solutions. So often today, products, they actually come with some cloud or other elements, such as many mobile applications. They usually they access data in the cloud, and these are essential functionalities of the program. And then you would also have to ensure the security of these remote data processing solutions. As I already explained, we only regulate commercial products. So anything that is non-commercial is outside the scope, including open source when it's non-commercial. But on the other hand, so open source that is commercial, I mean, there are a lot of large commercial projects, I'm sure you're aware of them, they would be covered. And then we exclude certain products that are already regulated by other regulations, such as cars or medical devices. Why did we choose to exclude non-commercial open source software from the scope? There are a few reasons. And first of all, this is standard practice for any new legislative framework product regulation at union level. We only focus on commercial activities. But also in the case of open source, there are some more special considerations that we took. So first of all, would it be fair to regulate someone that does not make a profit with a product, right? I mean, and we think it would not. And wouldn't we be setting the wrong incentives to regulate someone who doesn't make money with it, right? I mean, would you keep developing something if you're asked to like follow regulation and you're not even earning money with it? So we would be setting the wrong incentives. That's why we decided to exclude them. And then, of course, we also know that open source, I mean, it's critical often from a cybersecurity perspective, but it's just as critical from an innovation and growth perspective. I mean, there are so many small companies, medium-sized companies, that use your components, your products, free of charge to develop on top other products and services. And for them, it's crucial that they have access to this resource. And we're fully aware of that. And my colleague Reis, he will later on the panel also explain to you in how many other ways we support open source as the European Commission. So here in a nutshell, the obligations that manufacturers of commercial products would have to comply with. I mean, first you do a risk assessment of your product during the design phase. Then you comply with the essential requirements that are in the regulation. I explained earlier what they look like, these high-level objective-oriented requirements. Then you establish vulnerability handling processes, such as a coordinated vulnerability disclosure policy. And of course, I mean, with any legislation, you will have to document in which way you comply. This would be called a technical file. And once you've done all that, once you've done the conformity assessment, you can affix the CE marking to your product. And then for a period of 5 years, you will be required to handle the vulnerabilities that arise in your products. On top of that, there's also an obligation to report critical vulnerabilities to our cybersecurity agency. We are talking about vulnerabilities that are already exploited in the wild by criminal actors, but that have not been necessarily fixed. And this is for the purpose of helping national authorities mitigate risks in critical infrastructure and so forth. Here's one example of how we are also trying to help the community. So in the Article 11, which is about the reporting requirements for manufacturers, we require them whenever they integrate a component and they discover a vulnerability in it, and this could be an open source component, that they notify the entity or the person that maintains this component. I mean, so people like you often, for example. So for example, when you source a component and then you discover a vulnerability, at least you should reach out to the maintainer and inform them of the vulnerability. Ideally do more, maybe even provide code to fix it. So here is how it